Welcome to Pixels and Polygons. I'm Darren Hubke. This is a conversational podcast centered around gaming, where my guests and I answer a question based on the episode topic. This week's episode is Average Games. Today, my guests and I will discuss average games. These aren't bad games, but they could be. Sometimes average games are just what you need. You can't only be playing AAA masterpieces, so these are the games that you play in between, or that you got as a surprise, or received as a gift from a friend or family member. This week's guests are my friends Thomas and Jeff. We'll start off with Jeff and have him introduce himself before I roll into our conversation.
I'm Jeff Amaranto. I am a dancer and filmmaker here in Arizona, Chandler, Arizona. I have a lot of passions, but one of my main ones is video games. And yeah, just really honored you to have me on here talking about this and just to, yeah.
You've got a prompt and I've got ears. So I want to hear what you've got to say and then we'll kind of just we'll just talk from there.
Okay, nice. Yeah, so my prompt basically was I was going back through a bunch of old games that I played and just going through, sifting through my mind of all the stuff I used to play. And looking them up, most of the games I loved had terrible reviews. They're all bad. So I just wanted you to tell me about some of your top games that you know are bad, but your nostalgia just won't let you hate them.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. I've got a bunch of games like that. Yeah, I think that as a kid, like that's where the nostalgia bug bites you because you don't have this like outside influencing, like telling you what to like or what to not like, you know? And then like my age, like I didn't have like internet access like constantly as a child, you know, it wasn't until like my teen years that was more of a constant thing. So like, yeah. I mean, if I didn't have a video game magazine telling me what to think about something, I had to formulate my own opinion. So I do like a lot of bad games and not bad games, but you know, games that weren't necessarily like the big hits, but I still have like a fondness for them. Yeah. Yeah. Me and my friend was just out for Thanksgiving, but like, we both love this game on the Dreamcast, Blue Stinger. It was like it's like a Resident Evil, like knockoff, like, I don't know.
The Walmart brand?
Yeah. It's like, you know, it wanted to be a survival horror game, a survival horror, like action game. And it was like fully 3D. So yes, Code Veronica like would exist on the Dreamcast. This predated Code Veronica.
Oh yeah. This looks like Walmart brand for sure.
Yeah, but I love its character models. Like the character models are like really cool. Yeah. Like they're chunky, like PlayStation 1, like,
oh, yeah.
You know, updated versions. And, but I mean, there were things that it did that were cool. Like like you collected money like in the game for no reason, but like it made sense because you could buy health items from a vending machine, or you could go to like the places in this like facility you were in and actually like use that money, and it wasn't for nothing. Like, so like you had additional mechanics that Resident Evil didn't have. It wasn't just heal item, ammo, like go. Like there was other stuff going on with it. And it had a really bizarre story, like it was just bad, really bad voice acting, like really clunky controls, a really difficult camera. It was never actually scary for a horror game. And it was never actually like action packed for an action game. And, yeah, but it was just one of those things that like, you know, the Dreamcast was new and it was like, what's that like next gen, like game that's going to make this system worth owning. And like, so you tried a lot of things. And so that one, like nostalgically, like I look back on that game, like in that era, and like I love that game, even though it is not like at all like a 10 out of 10 or even a 7 out of 10 or, you know, anything like that at all. Like that's for sure one of mine.
Oh, for sure. That's looking at the box art now. And
oh, yeah. It's got
the pictures of it. It's great.
What was his name? The guy you run into in the yellow shirt and the bandana on his head. His name was Dogs Bauer. I think his name was Elliot or something with an E.
The first thing that comes up is that guy with the bandana and your main character in a bath together. They're like sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
And what looks like onsen.
It's interesting, and it's weird. Like, the tone of the game doesn't match some of the voice acting and dialogue that they have in the interactions. So it's interesting. It was supposed to be some system seller, and it was supposed to be like a big, you know, huge game for the Dreamcast and everything, but it just did not shake out that way. I mean, you obviously you thought that up. Like, what are some of the games for you that, you know, that sparked for you?
Yeah, I definitely have a grip of them. Like your game, I tend to play a lot of the games my parents just bought for me. They would go to the store and be like, and look at a box and be like, oh, I think he would like this, and just bring it home, and that's the game I play. So there's this game.
You're actively researching in the moment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, okay.
You're fine. No, you're good.
I do have a few here. The Walmart brand of...
Walmart brand.
The basically the Walmart brand of Pokemon games I love. So there's this game on the PlayStation called Monster Rancher.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've ever played Monster Rancher.
Yes.
I loved Monster Rancher. Monster Rancher 1 and 2.
Yeah.
2 on PlayStation. But it would be this game where you go around, and the gimmick was you can grab a disc from any, you know, any compact disc and put it in, and it would generate like a monster for you. There was a TV show, a pretty bad TV show and everything with it, but I loved that game. I remember,
what was the name of the eyeball monster? Was those like Suezos or something weird? Like
I really, really enjoyed that game. It was basically you just, you know, had this monster, you would feed it food, you would train it, and then you would take it to the Coliseum and get your ass whooped. I never beat it. All my monsters died over time because I didn't take care of them. But just that concept of grabbing whatever disc and trying it out was awesome. I remember putting in the Matrix disc from the movie Matrix. And that being my main character, he was like a wolf, like this really dope blue wolf. That's one of them. Also, I don't know if that was really loved. Looking up reviews for it, it was like a 6.5 to like a 57% online. Other games, like, let's see here, I have Mystical Ninja starring Goemon on the Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
A super weird game. It's I think it's like half a musical, because all I remember from that game is just these weird musical intros. If you can look them up sometime, they're wonderful. But it was just like a Mario 64-esque game. Super, super Japanese. Really funky dialogue, funky characters. That is a game I've rented a million times. I never bought it because I didn't have money to buy games, but a game I constantly rented, and probably one of the first games I ever beat. But that doesn't have very great reviews. It's like a six at the highest. But I have a ton of those games.
Interesting. Do you find like the nostalgia for these games, because like you said, like your parents wrenched them for you, or you not having that influence on it, like that just makes them memorable for you? Like, I mean, that's interesting. So I'm thinking about that, like me going all the way back to like my like NES days, like playing, what was that? There's like a WWF like wrestling game. It's like really bad. I think Rare made it and everything, but it is a terrible game. But like when I think of wrestling video games, like that one will always like pop into my brain and everything, because like having that rented, because like, oh, Darren will like this. This is something that they'll play, and it was just being a bad game. But I still like this fondness for it. So it's interesting how it's that when you didn't have a choice, you had to find the fun out of it regardless. Like, you know,
for sure.
You still put the time in, you still tried to do something, you know, like that was worthwhile. Even if it wasn't, even if you knew in those moments it wasn't that good of a game, you were still trying to find something fun out of it to get your value. Because it's that or play the same old games you've already had access to over and over.
Yeah.
And you weren't going to do that.
100%. No.
That's funny.
that ends my conversation with Jeff. We continue talking more, but that's going to be enough for this episode. We'll continue to talk together, and I'll continue to have him on the show in future weeks. So hopefully you enjoyed that. My next guest is my buddy Thomas.
Tell us who you are, and maybe tell us your favorite Nintendo 64 game.
Hello, this is Thomas Johns here. I've been playing games since I was 2 or 3 years old. I can't remember being that young, but that's what they tell me. They haven't played games that long, you know. My favorite games from all over the spectrum of every console release, specifically on the 64. I think I was a big Majora's Mask fan. There was something about the time travel-y, storytelly arc, and also, you know, it's just depressing. It was a depressing game, but I really enjoyed that. It was probably my favorite 64 game.
That's cool. That's a good, I mean, obviously, it's one of those GOAT considered games. So,
Zelda
game. Yeah. That's cool. All right. Well, next time we'll have you on quite a few times, but we'll make sure we learn something new about you each time we're on. So thanks for joining.
For sure. Maybe I'll relaunch my Twitch channel so I can be a little more relevant in the gaming community.
Yeah, you can follow. What is your Twitch handle so people can randomly follow if they wanted to?
I haven't played in a year now, but it would be twitch.tv/TomBear, TH0MBEAR. And then I just posted only the series of the Count Lucanor on YouTube. I think that's an unknown Tom Bear.
Hmm. Okay, well, there you go. There's some plugs.
Not great at editing, though, so it's a little rough sometimes.
The question that was posited here that we have a prompt for you and I, Thomas, is what's a game that you know isn't great, but you still love?
Yeah.
So,
with that...
Yeah, I was going to say, you're the guest. I would like you to go ahead and answer it first. I want to hear what you've got, what's in your mind.
With that, it took a minute because it's like, well, there are plenty of games out there that I enjoy that from a review standpoint or just in my mind, I know the mechanics weren't sound or there were just issues, but for some reason it enthralled me or captured me and I enjoyed it. And I didn't... I didn't want to be so broad and be like, oh, it's a game everyone's heard of. But I guess this one's a weird one. It's called Artanelico Quoga.
Oh.
It was a PS3 game.
Okay.
It's an RPG. I mean, it could have been the age I was playing it. Get into kind of what it's about. I'm not sure if you have you heard of this game.
I mean, I can picture the box art and I know the Artanelico, like, games, like, you know, as a series, but never have I ever played one, nor have I like ever had that like deep RPG itch to like venture off that far from my beaten path to try them.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't even know. Oh, this must have been a GameStop buy two get one free situation. I'm trying to harken back how I even came upon it, because I had no idea what the series was about, and I was like, an RPG, a box, it looks cool. Oh, I had no idea what it was in for. I mean, I can barely remember the combat. But the game is perverted. I think that's why I enjoyed it.
Okay. I was going to ask. There was a 360 game that came bundled with like a mouse pad or something like that. But like the little wrist gel like pad was like... It was either a butt or like a pair of boobs or something like that. And so I was wondering, is this like a pervy RPG or is this not? And okay, it is.
It is pervy. A little bit of the baseline of it. Like you're a guy. I think they label you a conductor or something because women have song magic or something like that. I can't remember why, but you have to enter their soul space. And you know, every time you do that, they have different Soul Space ports on their body or what have you. Obviously, there's like a or moan. I didn't need to do that, but hey, that's for you. You keep that in your back pocket. and as pervy as that sounds, honestly, each character has like intense emotional trauma and problems that you have to break through. It's like have your relationship evolve, and their magic gets powerful based on how your relationship is. I don't think I'd played a game like that before, where you were truly getting that intimate with another character. I mean, other RPGs would do that, where you'd be like friends or what have you, but this is different, and I think that's why it stood out to me, where I enjoyed it, because I can't for the life of me remember the battle system. I don't recall any of that.
Well, like, I mean, so then that was the draw, because, yeah, I mean, that's why I'd be curious to know, like, what about it technically was the thing that maybe kept you, like, kept it on a higher tier than maybe it deserved and all that stuff, but I guess there was, like, the narrative draw?
The narrative draw was the biggest, and here's how big the draw was for me. In most, there are some games that do this. There's maybe a midpoint, maybe a third of the way through the game, there was a boss battle. And it seemed like, you know, it was one of those boss battles you just couldn't win. And coming off of my treacherous Star Ocean unbeatable boss battle that scarred me for a long time, I just thought I couldn't do it. So I lost that battle. The game moved on. Felt like the story. And then the story kind of ended maybe 15, 20 hours later. And I was like, this ending sucked ass. Like, what happened? Like, I don't get it. I was so angry. I played like the ending area, or what I thought was the ending area, for a while. But it turns out that mid-battle boss fight, I was supposed to win and unlock another girl. And there was a whole different storyline to play. So this game was so narrative-driven, it gave you another 15 hours of gameplay where it wasn't even part, like, you just screwed up, and you didn't even know you screwed up.
Was it, like, telegraphed? Like you knew that was where you missed, or...
Well, they indicated, I believe, that there was like a powerful thing in there, a creature in there, and I can't recall what happens when you lose that fight. I think it's time-based. It sounds like the person just dies in there, but no, they must have lived, because I think at the end there, like, a lot of people die or something like that if you have the bad ending. But they didn't indicate that you should have won. Like, they made no conclusion, like, oh, you should reload your game. Like, nowadays, if that, I'm sure there are other games, more indie games out there now that do that, but you would just be told you lost, you need to beat this battle to get the real ending. Like, that style of, I guess, gotcha gaming, or it really pissed me off.
Oh, dang.
But I went back and I played it.
Yeah, that's interesting. But obviously, like, so you personally, like, me knowing you, like, I know you like RPGs and games like that. So, like, you can kind of see through what maybe like a casual player or like an outside player might like deem like, oh, I can't even continue from here, or this is just, you know, below average or just not interesting. Like, you're able to filter through kind of like the nonsense and still see like the good behind some of the bad charm.
Yeah, there was definitely good charm to this game. There's some, I'm not going to call it any specific franchises, but there are some fan service-y games that don't really do anything to drive a real narrative or a real story. Your characters are like single dimension. It could be younger lens. I think, I mean, this game came out, 15, 20 years ago? I can't even remember when PS3 era was anymore, but I could have just been young and dumb. It felt like it was a...
And full of... Oh, no, never mind.
Oh, no, not with this game. You know, I was entering all the time and releasing into their soul space.
Oh, God.
Is it this type of show?
I mean, it can be. I can put the explicit tag on here just to be safe. Make sure no children are violated with their soul spaces.
Oh, no, there are no child soul spaces violated in this game or any other. All right.
That's funny. Yeah, I could think about this. I had a similar conversation with somebody else, my friend Jeff, and I had mentioned Blue Stinger, obviously, is a game like that that me and you have spent some time with. But a game that I'll share here that I know isn't great, but that I still love, would be 99 Nights. We both have like the affinity for like the Dynasty Warriors games. Like, I know that those are never like, you know, gold tier. People aren't like putting them on like game of the year lists or anything like that at all. I like the mindlessness of it, and just sometimes it's cool to have like a long challenge of having to grind through a bunch of enemies and a couple like challenging like boss fights here and there, or like, you know, like generals here and there and all that stuff. But they're never really like more than like kind of surface level entertainment for me. I thought 99 Nights like tried to do some things better than Dynasty Warriors, but it also came up short in a couple ways from Dynasty Warriors. But it was just cool like seeing that many characters like on screen, because it definitely upped the numbers significantly from Dynasty Warriors. But they were like mindless. Like they like the AI was never ever really challenging. It was more of just like, hey, there's 30 of them in front of you. Like, that's the challenge. Like, if you let one get through and hit you, like, it's not going to be good. But you would just like constantly swing through and avoid it. But yeah, it was colorful. Like the characters were all kind of like random and different. Like, it had just like it pulled from like a strange like RPG like background for like its story and like the narrative of it all. So I think that's what made it also kind of more interesting, but also maybe because I had played, you know, a number of Dynasty Warriors games, that like anything would have been different. But I do enjoy Rimbor. Like, that was one of those games early on in the 360 life for me that like maybe kind of enjoy that system for similar reasons why I enjoy like PlayStation stuff, because there was like a lot of just different genres, and even if they weren't hitting it out of the ballpark, they were just trying something different or like looking to bring something different to the console for that, the start of that generation and stuff. So I really enjoyed it. Did you play 99 Nights yourself?
I did play 99 Nights at some point. I'm trying to recall like what the story was about, but I guess that wasn't even the point, because then like you referenced Dynasty Warriors, obviously that's
yeah,
like Three Kingdoms period China, it has like a rich history to it. But for this, I'm like, was it just like, no, I'm thinking of Bladestorm right now too. Holy crap. Anyway, a different game.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you what the plot was. I don't even remember a single thread of the plot for it, nor do I remember if there were a number of nights that happened, maybe 99 of them, that led to like some kind of conflict or something. Yeah, I don't remember anything about that. It was the gameplay. That was a game that like the narrative like wasn't important for me, because I just wanted to get into doing an XXYXXXXY combo and, you know, seeing some flashy animation happen and everything.
That game and those style of games, they were just the true, I guess not successor, but evolution of like the side-scrolling fighter. Like, you just need a good beat 'em up sometimes.
Yeah.
And even though, yeah, they're not carrying great narrative, or maybe not, just, yeah, thousands, yeah, literally thousands. You'll have a kill counter of 1,000 in one fight, just laying waste entire civilization.
Yeah, it was nuts. But so good. It was mindless, you know, like on the surface, but like there was still just like a rhythm to it. And I think it's part of it too, like when you get in doing like those combos and like the button mashing of it, like you can button mash your way to freedom, you know, and be done. But like there are like character combos that were like longer strings of like alternating button inputs. And if you know, you were mistimed or you broke it or did the wrong input, you'd have to start all over again type of thing. So it was cool to know like, oh no, I want this move that's going to sweep and like knock up this like, you know, group into the air so that I can jump and then do extra damage to them, aerial or things like that. Like, so it's not completely mindless. And I think I can see through like the repetitiveness of it to find like those little things that I do enjoy. But 99 Nights is a game for sure that is an average game for all intents and purposes, but one I still enjoy.
I had to pull it up because I was like, let me just make sure I have played it, and now it's stinging me really hard. This 99 Nights as NIGHT and not KNI.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
I remember thinking it was because you kill so many people. Yeah, 99 knights, as in armored warriors.
No. Time of day.
Time of day. Oh yeah. My god.
Yeah.
There must have been. That's probably the story right there. Maybe 99 Nights Until the End of the World. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, it writes itself.
Yeah.
There was a sequel, and I do remember spending like some time with it, but not a lot.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. It was on 360. It was like the cover, the logo was really confusing, but it was like N3, the letter N, the number 3, and then like a 2 in the background because it was 99 Nights is all N.
Looking it up now, yeah.
Yeah. It was good, and I think I would have liked it more had I it come out maybe a little bit sooner or something. I think it was just a time and place type of thing for me. Mm-hmm. Like I just missed it, but it did improve upon all of the mechanics. I think it had like more playable characters, and then some of the levels had like more like variety for what you needed to do for clear conditions. So like for all reasons, I should enjoy it. I just have never played it, and now, I mean, I don't know how I'd even go back and play that. I mean, I guess an Xbox Series console would theoretically give me backwards compatibility, but I'm not going to go through that hassle.
Well, I mean, looking at this red and white banner up here, this is Konami on it. N32, I had no idea it was Konami. Wow.
You know what? Konami published it. I think Microsoft published the first one.
The first one, yeah.
Microsoft must have passed on publishing it here in America, and maybe Konami picked it up. I'm not sure, but... Yeah, I mean, it's not worth going out of your way for it, but if you like beat 'em ups or those Dynasty Warrior style games, it's just a change of pace. But cool. Thanks for answering that question with me, Thomas.
No, for sure.
All right, so that's the end of that conversation, and that'll also be the end of the episode. Hopefully this got you thinking about your own answers to these questions and maybe your own interest in nostalgia. And I plan to have different guests each week, and each episode will kind of rotate through different people just for the perspective of it all and hear kind of different thoughts and opinions. Some of the episodes might revisit the same topics, but something designed to create conversation, just have some fun. So if you enjoyed it, I appreciate you spending the time and listening to the end, and maybe we'll catch you listening in a future week. Thanks. Bye.